The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
All I'm after is to be on your winning side. All I need is to be turning back the tide. 'Cause I care too much for the life that I led. What you're thinking could be anybody's guess. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan making his fourth appearance on the show, Jeffrey Coast. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's wonderful to be back on the show again.
Now, before we go any further, remind us where you're from and then tell us what's been going on with you since the last time you were on the show.
Well, I'm from good old Northeast Ohio, live about 1 hour outside of Cleveland. I'm about a little bit, if anyone's familiar with Youngstown, Ohio, I'm actually about 25 minutes living from there. Well, some things have changed. I've actually started a new job last summer and working as a sales rep for a tobacco company. So that's new. Traveling in the territory, get to meet some interesting people. And so it's a nice little stretch. But on the music side of things, it's got some wonderful opportunities. I've gotten to meet some really talented musicians. And I'm actually getting ready to start recording some songs in the near future. TBD on that, but it's coming.
Now, you wanted to talk about All I'm After on today's program. So I'm wondering, what's the reason for wanting to talk about that? What does the song mean to you, Jeffrey?
All I'm After is, being the Lightfoot fan that I am, as many others are on this podcast, we all love Lightfoot's deep tracks. And I really have to agree with Bob Dylan when he said that there's not a bad song that Gordon Lightfoot wrote, and there's a song that he did not like. And I love a lot of his deep tracks on his albums. There's just some really, really good gems in there. And this one is one of them. I really like it because, well, again, I mentioned this before too. It has to go back to, I'm really close with my dad, and this was a song that he had on his cassette tape that he had recorded from the vinyl. And he always told me, I just love this song. I remember every time we'd be driving or something, he'd really turn it up. And so, you know, that's been with me all these years. So now when I'm out driving and working or wherever and this song comes on, it's just the same thing. And it just brings back a lot of good memories. But I really like not just that memory for me, but I like what Gordon says in the song. It's a really romantic song. And the music is just it's an amazing arrangement.
Do you have a personal anecdote about that song and what it means to you?
Nothing yet, but I do. When I do meet the right girl, I do intend to actually want to slow dance to this song, even though I can't dance. But man, this is one of those songs that I think would be perfect. And I know that previous girls I've dated in the past, I've always shared Gordon Lightfoot with them, and they've always developed a like for his songs. So I figure they always like the romantic side of his writing. And so I just envision myself someday, even probably maybe at my wedding, if we're going to talk way ahead of time here, that would be a perfect song to slow down. If not just the two of us in our home, you know, it's a perfect song for that. And that's definitely an anecdotal thing for me of what I can see, even if it's a future memory, if it hasn't happened yet.
Now, is this more of a situational song for you? Like there has to be a perfect setting where you would listen to it, or could you listen to the song kind of absolutely anywhere?
I could listen to this song just about any time, anywhere. It's like one of those songs. It doesn't matter where I'm at. I can just listen to it, whether it's out walking on the street or sitting here at home working in the background or even out driving. It's a perfect song for any one of those things in my book.
Now, this song is something of a rarity in that I can't find anything at all. I mean, nothing about how this song came to be, what the circumstances were when he was writing it, what it was about, who it's about, any of that kind of stuff. Did I miss anything? Do you have an angle on how it got composed?
No, I'm with you on that. This song is one of those rare songs that either he was never asked about or was never divulged in the book. I can only imagine. I know some of the songs that he recorded, I always thought when it came to album time, as he often said in Jenny's book, he would go into a writing session. He would write, you know, 12, 13 songs. In my mind, I always thought that those songs that, that appeared on those albums he wrote for were the ones he wrote during those sessions. But then again, you look at songs like Go My Way or even Blackberry Wine were all written either in 1971, then record, or I'm sorry, written in like 1968 and then recorded in 1970. And then Blackberry Wine, copyrighted 1979, recorded 1981. So it could be anybody's guess on this song. I would imagine that he most likely wrote this probably for the preparing for those album sessions for Shadows. I feel like that it's probably a good guess, but it's really who's to say, because we don't know.
Well, let's jump into the words a little bit. There's a lot to go over here. All I'm after is to be on your winning side. So the implication here, I guess, is that he isn't on her winning side at this moment, but he either wants to get there or he wants to get back there. All I need is to be turning back the tide. And I'm not sure if that means he wants to change the past, which of course is a fool's errand, or maybe he wants to change the course of the relationship. It's hard to say. Because I care too much for the life that I led, and that's where I got stumped. So what do you think he's talking about here?
It comes a good question, because when I first heard the song way back without looking at the lyrics, it almost sounded like he said the life that I live, but then I saw in future listenings, oh, he said the life I lead. So in my mind, it feels like that he's referring to his life as a musician, as a touring recording musician who's not home very much. And and he does mention that even in his later years, he mentioned how much he loved being on the road. And when he wasn't on the road, he was restless. So, and it seems like that, you know, and that's where like some of his relationships didn't always make it, was because he loved being on the road, loved to do what he did. And I think that's where in some of his relationships probably didn't last, because he wasn't home very much for the relationship to remain stable. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. All I'm after is the sun and the summer nights. And that kind of implies that he's either figuratively or literally in a cold, dark winter place, because he wouldn't be yearning for it if it wasn't there. Also, sun and summer are generally cheerful and positive settings. I mean, the earth is coming alive. It's warmer, it's more palatable, all those kinds of things. By the seashore, don't want no more neon lights. And it made me wonder, does this mean that he's tired of life in a city, or is he tired of the performing lifestyle, the troubadour lifestyle? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the performing side he always loved, but I do think about the neon lights. I think that, of course, and you hear even a lot of musicians who tour, the best part is the performing side, but it's the traveling in between where you're seeing neon lights from your bus or your plane or wherever. And even Bob Seger's song, Turn the Page, talks about the downsides of being on the road. So I could see where the traveling side, seeing neon lights, can get boring. Being on stage is probably where it's the best 2.5 hours you're good, but then the rest of it's a grueling traveling schedule. So I could see where he's on the road, and traveling can get you very tired, whether again flying or on the bus. But and wanting to get back to a more simplistic thing, and we know that he loved being in nature and going on canoe trips. He always did canoe trips before he did writing. I mean, not writing, but recording sessions, because it got him also back into shape for going on the road. So it was like a way to pull away to recharge. So to want to be on the seashore, you know, when the sun and summer nights, it sounds like that's a place to recharge, rest, get away, and just disconnect and be where, you know, in a place where there's nothing demanded of you.
Yeah. And when there's nothing demanded of you, you're probably in a better place to write and to compose music. And we know that he did a lot of composing in conjunction with those canoe trips. Just the sand and the sky as the hours roll by. Maybe there was some time when he was with this woman by the sea that he is now reminiscing about. And then he says, ain't it funny how the world seems to be back there in my dreams? And obviously dreams has a whole bunch of different possible connotations here. Do you have any idea about what he was trying to say here?
Yeah. So it's like he's thinking, you know, how the world seems to be back there in my dreams. So, yeah, it's like he was reflecting that looking forward to those sun sunrise. So it's like he's looking back in retrospect. And then and it's like a world that he was in with this person that at this point in time seems to suggest by that line, he's no longer in. So that's an interesting point, because it seems like he's talking about something that he could easily get back to with this person. But then when he says in that world seems to be back there in my dreams, and it's like either it's a past part of that relationship that has been neglected, or it's no longer happening. Perhaps maybe even these two are separated right now, and he's seeing that at this point in time, the world that which we had is not, it's at this point only exists in my dreams and not in the current reality.
All I see is my reflection in your wild and winsome ways. And I can't help but think about he might be looking back on his own wild and winsome ways, or how he was playing seducer, all of the women that he tried to make time with, so to speak. It would explain how he sees his own reflection in that mirror, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It seems like that wild and winsome ways. I like the way he writes that. So it's like, in a way that, yeah, it seems like he's attracted to the one side of things that draw him in. And then there's also the wild side. Then there's also the winsome side. So yeah, I would agree, given what he's divulged and revealed in the Jennings book. I would agree. I agree with your assessment on that one. That makes the most sense.
All I'm after is to be the flame in your tattoo. Be the one girl who can thrill me through and through. This is just a guess, but I must confess it feels better being certain. And he isn't certain about where he stands at this point, and that bothers him. That's a major part of the human condition, isn't it? We don't like uncertainty. But now he's talking about, please excuse my truthfulness. And does that kind of imply that he hasn't been 100% truthful before? Is he being blunt to the point of making this person uncomfortable? Any thoughts?
Yeah, it seems like maybe perhaps there wasn't a whole lot of honesty he feels on his part. And maybe he felt that he never quite really said how he really felt. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps even says, please excuse my truthfulness. It almost sounds like he's being blunt, like, please forgive me for being blunt, but this is exactly how I feel about this, whether or not you might agree, this is how I feel, and I'm basically laying my cards on the table. That's my interpretation of that.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two. One minute, you're a teacher preparing for the new school year. The next, you're transported to a fantastical realm shrouded in forgotten magic. The creatures around you think you're a long-vanished mage. You have no technology. You have no memory of how you got here, and no idea how to get home. All you have is misplaced magic. Haladar, The Last Surveyor is the new fantasy novel by acclaimed author Rob Perrier. Available now on Amazon.com and RobPerrier.com.
In 1942, when the world needed a hero to fight the forces of evil, a woman had the courage to step forward. Her name was Helen Meeker. Her adventures took her across the United States and behind the lines of both the European and Pacific fronts. President Franklin Roosevelt trusted her judgment. Adolf Hitler put a price on her head. And in the face of overwhelming odds, she battled through everything that was thrown at her, dodged death countless times, and challenged the most diabolical figures in history. The star of more than 20 novels, Helen Meeker proved her grit and determination time and time again. And now the Long Highway Players bring the book series to life on the airways. These exciting dramas will place you in the middle of the action, immerse you in riveting drama, plunge you into unimagined intrigue, and confound you with dark mysteries, while giving you the opportunity to live adventures in a time when the fate of the world hung in the balance. Enjoy the exploits of Helen Meeker and follow author Ace Collins's In the President's Service series on That's Not Canon Podcast Network.
What I'm seeing's worth believing when you thrill me like you do. So you wonder why my feelings never fade. I think I got it made. In the evening when the rain begins to fall, that's when I wonder if you think of me at all. And I wonder, why is it the rain that makes him so thoughtful? It does remind me of Looking at the Rain, which of course is one of my very favorite Lightfoot songs from his somewhat earlier days. Any thoughts on rain? He's mentioned it in other songs. That was just the first one I thought of at that point.
It could be the fact that for sometimes, and with even some people too, it seems like when it's raining, sometimes you're often stuck inside and you're looking out the window waiting for an opportunity to come out. And for some reason, seeing rain can, well, it can dampen your mood for one, but
no,
it can
pun
also,
intended.
Yeah, pun intended, of course. But it can also get you to go into a retrospective or contemplative state. And I feel like that, you know, and as you've mentioned, he's used that metaphor before, looking at the rain, and you know, and then, and same thing also going back to that song about seeing the wind, watching it spin leaves, and it's like whether it be in that song or this one, it's like it puts him into a contemplative state, or it could, again, it could also be bringing him into sort of a more, I don't know if somber mood's a good point, but it definitely, I would say, of a retrospective mood about this relationship.
And then he finishes up with, but you sound so sad in your special way. And I'm wondering, has he been talking to this person and heard her voice? And because he knows it so well, he can hear the intonations. Where's that coming from?
Yeah, it seems like, and I can see this where perhaps, and this is all speculation on my part, but it could be perhaps, again, being in that reflective state. Being stuck inside looking out, you think, you know, I think I should give him a call to see how she feels about this. And on, let's say on that chance she does pick up and they had that conversation, and you sound so sad in your own special way, it almost sounds like that how he's feeling could be very well that she's feeling the exact same way he is in that moment, in her own way.
So the song originally appeared on Shadows. That was his 14th original album. It was released in 1982. It's the 8th song on the record, so it's way down there. It was not released as a single. The album went to 16 in Canada, 87 in the US. It didn't chart in the UK, in Australia, or in New Zealand. I gotta tell you that my favorite musical aspect of the song has to be the finger picking. It's very familiar, and it's a style that I've used myself a lot. It's very common in folk music, but as usual, the way Lightfoot played it was flawless and absolutely correct. What's your favorite musical aspect of the song, Jeffrey?
I really like, there's two elements I like a lot. I like the brushes that Barry Keane does in the back. It's a very nice touch, but I really, really love what really stands out in the song is Pee-wee Charles's slide dobro work on this. I mean, that really, I've had the pleasure of speaking to Ed Ringwald through the Facebook on the Lightfoot fan page. He's such a very nice gentleman. Mm-hmm. And I've complimented him a couple of times because I just love his work, but that is such an intricate, sweet part of that song. It just makes the song so well. And the fact that it's rare where the lead line is not being done by Terry Clements on his guitar, but rather Terry's playing more of a almost tremoloed guitar line behind it on his Gretsch. But I just love that slide dobro work. And it's really well tasteful. It's very well timed. It gives a really nice, sweet, maybe bittersweet would be a good word to use into that song. It's very nice, wonderful touch.
Lightfoot had an awful lot of people playing on this. The best guesses that I have about who played what, besides Gordon himself, Rick was playing bass, Terry Clements was playing lead guitar, Barry Keane was playing drums and percussion, Michael Heffernan on keyboards and synthesizer. That's the key members of the band right until Gordon passed away. Pee Wee Charles on steel guitar and dobro. He was still with the band. Dean Parks on electric guitar. Herb Peterson on harmony vocals, and then Patrick Miles on electric guitar. So as we say, a lot of people that contributed to this album. We don't know exactly who played what instrument on this song. That's just my best conclusion. Something interesting about this is that Gordon only played this song in concert one time, and it was in October 1981 at Northrop Auditorium in Minneapolis. So this is before the record came out. And I gotta wonder, why didn't he play it more often? It's a great song. You have any speculation about that?
It's possible that he himself maybe was not all that fond of it, and he played it one night and maybe was like, I don't want to do this song again. You know, it's kind of interesting because there's some of those songs, like, you always wonder if he ever did. Like Tattoo, for example, was never played live.
Right.
And I actually was just breaking off for a moment about that song, but I did manage to hear a bootleg recording that a fan posted on YouTube from 1984. And you could hear someone in the audience calling out Tattoo, but he went and did something else. But I thought that was kind of interesting. But I just think it might have been a song that we know that he had a rotating list of songs. And at that time, from what I understand, he never really had a concrete set list.
No.
So I feel like that perhaps he tried it and to see if the audience really liked it. Maybe they didn't, or maybe he just felt, I'd rather do these other songs instead that might be better ones to drive up. Possibly he also may have was doing songs that from the album that were the singles, like Baby Step Back or In My right. Fashion, something that would get the airplay. And I think since that was such a deep track, he might have just tried it once to see how it went and then maybe decided he wasn't going to play it anymore.
Very likely. And we've certainly seen that with other songs that we've talked about on this show. I can't find any official covers of this song. And when I say official, I mean that were released by a label. I'm not talking about somebody just playing it in front of a phone and then uploading it to YouTube. You have any ideas about who you would like to do a cover of this song? Because honestly, I'm stumped on this. I don't know that I could hear anybody really doing it.
I thought this over who I could think of somebody. Now, if it was one of Gordon's contemporaries, the one I think who could do it justice would be Jimmy Buffett, because it has very much a style of a song that he would write. Because you think Jimmy Buffett, you think of the sand, the sea, floor, you know, warm places. And this song would feel like a very good place to be, a song played on a beach, because it just has that very good feel. So if that was one of his contemporaries, I feel like Jimmy Buffett would have been a good one to try, at least attempt. In a modern setting, kind of feeling how it's very hard to decide the modern artist who could do this song justice. You know, it's hard on my mind. There is one in terms of that 3/4 waltz that comes to mind, is that Thinking Out Loud by Ed Sheeran. He might be able to do an attempt on it. And it does lyrically and sometime with the beat have a little bit of a vibe that he could definitely tap into. So I think he might be one who could pull it off.
Huh. I'd have to think about that. That might work. All right. Thanks. Any other closing thoughts on this song, Jeffrey, as we are kind of winding down here? Any parting shots at All I'm After?
Not too many others about it, but just that I feel like, as I know, there's a couple of thoughts I had when we were talking about him going back to the images of sailing and all that. And a thought did occur to me that in the Lifewood biography, it was mentioned that when he started dating Kathy Coonley, if we could assume, this song is probably about her most likely, because I know their relationship was on the rocks at this time. And they were separated. And I know that he had mentioned in the biography about disappointment that she didn't come up for his Massey Hall concert. I think it was 1981. She didn't come up and he hoped she would. But she did often go sailing with him in the late 70s and up to that time. So one could assume that it could very well be him thinking about her and reminiscing about that relationship. Cause you can get a feel for where he was at that time, that he wanted that relationship to work out.
Okay. Thanks. Before we let you go, how can people find out about what you're doing musically, your things that you've been up to, things that you are up to now, all of those good things? How can people find out about Jeffrey Coast's music?
You can currently find me on YouTube, and I do post Facebook Reels, but you can find me mainly on my YouTube channel, which is the Telecoaster 94 music channel. There is quite a bit of Lifewood cover content on there, as well as some bonus stuff from other artists and some Lifewood bootleg performances and stuff I've found. But I'm hoping to start posting some more original material on there as well. You can find me on Facebook too, which is Jeffrey R. Coast, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, R. Coast on there. And I do post reels on there too of stuff that links to YouTube. So that's where you can find me at this time, but there'll be more down the road once I get some stuff set up with recordings.
Jeffrey Coast, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun every time you've been on the show, and thank you for turning me back on to this song, and really looking forward to having you on the show again in the future.
Well, that's absolutely my thank you for having me. It was a great time, and I'd love to see you to be back on here again.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much, and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com. Well, our next episode is going to feature my guests, Kevin and Aaron Hester from Iowa. And they have been on this podcast before a few times. And they and I will be discussing the song Miguel from the 1971 Summer Side of Life album. And that episode will be coming out approximately the third week in May 2025. Until then, for Jeffrey Coast, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.